This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared creates collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
My next interview is with Hans Bloch and Moritz Riesewick, and we talk about their new, fascinating new film called The Cleaners. This is a film that premiered at Sundance and is having its Canadian premiere here at Hot Docs. You're going to want to see the film. You're going to want to, I hope, listen in to the conversation. We talk about censorship and we talk about politics and something that has been labeled, I guess, in the film, but also by many others, this idea, this notion of American Puritan values. We talk about a global sense of guidelines and how they lack clarity when it comes to something called content moderators and content moderation. This isn't just about illegal content that's making its way or trying to make its way onto the internet. This is about content that's being filtered, that's being censored by others who live in a country so far away from many of us, not for all of us, but for many of us. This is about utopian ideas and about the new digital public and about how Mark Zuckerberg possibly is being referred to and even in the interview as the front page editor for the whole world. You're going to want to listen in. I learned a ton about what's going on in something, you know, that we're calling the new media. And it really raises a question as that really has to ask where are we heading and in such a digital and mediated age. Fascinating conversation, fascinating film, a look at the shadowy underworld of the internet, without a doubt something that you're going to want to listen in on and see in the very near future. Don't forget davidpecklive.com for more information about my writing and speaking. Face2facelive.ca for many, many other interviews, filmmakers, authors, philosophers, comedians. And don't forget, if you want to get behind what I do, come alongside, you can do that through patreon.com. Coming right up, Hans Bloch and Moritz Riesewick and their new film, The Cleaners. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're live to tape at least, at Hot Docs Toronto with two filmmakers here to talk about their new film, The Cleaners, Hans Bloch and Moritz Riesewick. I hope I got that right, guys. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having us.
Pretty close on the pronunciation.
Yeah, pretty well. Pretty
good.
Pretty. Yeah.
So you just got into town yesterday. First time in Toronto.
Yes.
And overall impressions. Let's get the idle stuff out of the way right out of the gate.
It was quite rainy.
Yeah. Yeah. A little gray. Yeah. Did you get to a film last night, or have you been shaking hands today? How's things been going?
We were coming directly from Russia, from Moscow Film Festival. So unfortunately, we were quite tired until now, but we will have a tour around tomorrow.
And if this was a video, everyone, he's smiling. He's still smiling. They're both smiling. And the comedy has been very rich before the recorder started. So tell me a little bit about The Cleaners. I mean, I could certainly just dive right into a question or two, but tell our audience what and with the recent Facebook news,
and I mean just of a couple days ago, it's just the timing is perfect in a sense, isn't it?
Yeah, it's perfect timing. It's brilliant to screen the film at the Hot Talks Film
it's crazy
Festival.
I couldn't believe I saw the film about 10 days ago, and then I read this article and I went, well, are these guys really working in the background here or what?
Yeah, and we didn't expect that at all because we started working on the film 3 years ago.
Okay.
And the situation was quite different because when we started thinking about making a film about social media and the workers behind those closed doors working for social media platforms, we talked with our friends about that and they telling us, okay, why do you do a film about social media? It's boring. That was before Trump was elected, before Brexit, before all these social externalities coming up nowadays because of social media. Yeah, and what is the film about? The film is about a very hidden industry in the Philippines where thousands of young Filipinos sitting in front of a screen every day, 8 to 10 hours, and filtering everything what we are not supposed to see. So I'm talking about beheadings, child abuse, child pornography, violence, hatred, outrage stuff. So they're doing a quite important job for these social media platforms and no one knows about that. But on the other side, there's also like political content, which is being censored.
Satire.
And we raised the question with our film, what is visible on our platforms and what is not?
You use the word filtering. That's pretty interesting. How come you didn't use the word censorship?
You know, for decades, we were actually used to censorship by states, by governments, right? Mm. And we are still experiencing
like
that.
Like a political kind of censorship,
exactly.
Almost.
And it still is political censorship in the case of the censorship on Facebook and YouTube and Twitter. And now I said censorship. But it's a different form of censorship. It's not that we wouldn't blame them for being biased towards one direction or another. It's more that American Puritan values are actually distributed because the guidelines for these platforms are created in Silicon Valley behind closed doors under the influence of many powerful third parties like NGOs or interest groups. But what is maybe more important is that it seems like they even lost control over their guidelines, and because it's so hard if you want to create guidelines which need to fit to the whole world for people of so many different cultural backgrounds and values and moral codexes and so on, you really need to find compromises. And in a lot of cases it seems like these compromises can't be found, and what happens is that the content moderators in Manila,
which I love, by the way, I don't know who came up with that phrase, but I mean it sounds like George Orwell right out of 1984. Content moderators.
Yeah, it's a perfect name, and sometimes they call them even data analysts or community operations analysts.
Community operations analyst is even better.
They do.
Yeah, COA. Yeah.
What they're facing is a lot of problems in which it is not at all clear what these guidelines should tell them and how they should execute them. And whenever Facebook talks about their guidelines, it always seems like it's objective. It's
right.
Like you just have to execute it. It's so easy. No, it's not at all. It's hundreds of pages of guidelines, but still there remain so many gray areas in which the content moderators literally have to interpret these guidelines. And so they're sitting in front of their screens and they really have to use their gut feelings in a lot of cases.
Well,
that's what they told us.
And gut feelings, but I mean, in some cases, and this is absurd to me, but 25,000 images a day? Yeah. This is like their quota? I don't even know how that's possible.
Yes.
I mean, I know if you look at stats, I don't know, we see thousands of images a day from a lifestyle advertising perspective on our phones and on TV and driving on the highway and magazines and so on. But to actually make a decision, ignore, delete, over 25,000 images a day, just it's utterly absurd.
Yes, exactly. That was such a weird moment when, for the very first time, one of the content moderators showed us how he does it.
Yeah, I mean, we have to imagine the amount of content which is uploaded on the social media platforms every day is so high.
It's staggering.
It's staggering.
Can you pull any of those stats out? How many hundreds of hours of footage every minute. It's insane, right?
It's insane. It's like billions of posts every day on Facebook, like hundreds of hours every minute uploading on YouTube, for example. So these social media platforms or companies have a really big problem to watch through every content which is uploaded, because some of the content is really inappropriate and they need someone who is filtering or controlling that. And this is exactly what the content moderators do in Manila.
I don't know how I don't know how you take these, as you say, these objective guidelines and then apply them in such quantity, right? Mm-hmm. I mean it presupposes that you have this deep understanding of not only the people who wrote them, but the people who are going to interpret them and the people who might defend them in court and so on, right? I mean, and then of course, as the film develops, you ask more and more questions about this, the religious implications, the philosophical implications, and so on.
Exactly, and it's not just about illegal content.
Right.
We should really distinguish between the content which is, of course, to be taken down because it's definitely illegal in all over the world. And then there is content which is illegal in certain countries. And what they do is that they apply IP blocking so the governments or government authorities, for example, in Turkey, one example we have in our film, can ask the companies to take certain content which they dislike down, or otherwise they would block them in the country. And so we have one really, I think, touching moment in the film when one of the former policymaker for Google, YouTube, Twitter tells us, "We decided that we follow the Turkish government. We do what they want. We take this content down for Turkish users so that they are not able to see this kind of content." And this means that they censor themselves in order to stay in an important, economically important market. But that is the beginning. So imagine what happens if other countries follow, and they do. Other authoritarian leaders want the same for their countries. And then we get a balkanization of the internet where, like, people are not at all emancipated these companies, but they are kind of living in the illusion of, we can use all these nice new services. But what they do is they get a really censored light version, so to say.
Well, isn't the internet supposed to be a positive effect of globalization? Isn't that the idea? Right? Isn't this about flattening the world? Right? Thomas Friedman said that, leveling the playing field. But if people are at certain levels, as you say, making these decisions that seem rather arbitrary, what are the implications? Right?
Yeah.
Or what might be the implications?
I mean, nowadays, lots of people asking us, do you still have a Facebook account, for example?
That's a funny...
And we answer, yeah.
Will you be tweeting about this interview? Yeah, that's funny.
We have, because we believe in a way in the utopian idea to connect everyone.
Sure.
This is a brilliant idea to give everyone a voice across borders, to have a different form of information, or to give people the possibility to post something which is maybe not allowed in a country like a dictatorship or something. But we're facing really problems nowadays, and we have to ask, is the tool that we are using every day really well prepared, or do we have to change something? And for example, there's one thing which was really new for us when we researched about that the architecture of these platforms is in a special way designed. Everything which is extreme leads to advertisements. So these platforms are attention seekers. The most attention you can get on social media platforms is when you post something which is extreme.
Which I thought was really interesting at the end. That's near the end of the film that you guys talk about. Outrageous, isn't it?
Outrageous.
Something that creates outrage is what will get the most
attention.
Exactly,
because these platforms can convert the clicks, the likes, the shares into advertisement, into money. So that's why we have those huge amounts of hate speech and violence on these platforms, because the design is exactly built like that. So this is one of the problems we are facing right now, and the film tries to put pressure on the social media companies to change that, because it can be different.
And so, to sum it up, it's not just about criticizing these platforms that they take too much down, not only about their censorship or that they're keeping something away from us, which we would love to see. It's more like criticizing the way they deal with the dilemma of that in a lot of cases, it's really hard to decide mm-hmm. whether the public should see it or not. And they can't handle it in such an intransparent way. They should involve the public, because what we have in form of Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter is something like the new digital public. Mm. And in the analog public, we wouldn't accept one or a few companies deciding what we get to see or how we can move in this, for example, a marketplace or something in the outside world. And why do we accept that for the digital world? And in a lot of cases, like one example in our film is a guy. He's a really extreme right-wing guy who's spreading hatred on social media against minorities, against refugees, for example. And in Europe, for example, this would be the content he uploads would be definitely something the public would not want to see online on social media. They would ask the companies to take it down. In the States, as far as we have experienced, that is something the public actually argues should right. remain visible on right. social media, because it's protected by the First Amendment.
Right, freedom of speech.
Exactly. So I think this is kind of a core example in which you can see how difficult it is to keep up with the utopian idea of right. connecting the world.
Who actually decides? Who writes these long documents? Is it as silly as a people sitting in a boardroom? Is it just a group of lawyers that are paid enormous sums of money to come up with as clean a document as they can, and then others are left to interpret?
All the big social media companies have like policy teams, head of policy, and they are lawyers deciding what to see, what to not, but no one knows about them.
Right.
We tried to contact them several times and try to ask questions
sure.
because we had so much, and there was no response at all, for example. So we tried to contact Facebook, Twitter, Google, and there was no response.
And when you say no response, not even a response to the emails or the phone calls?
No, nothing.
Wow.
Really nothing.
Wow.
And we also sent the final film to the companies and asked for a public statement before we had the world premiere.
Yeah.
And there was also no response and no interest in have a public debate on these topics.
Which is fascinating.
Yeah,
right?
which is the main characteristic of these companies, because they are so intransparent, and this is part of the game.
Is it David Kaye who brings up the power of the company? Is he the one who talks about that in the film from the UN? He talks a little bit about freedom of expression, but also just that, or maybe it was my thought that I had while you were interviewing him. This it's not even a monopoly. It's almost beyond a monopoly, right? Because now it's shutting us down on a variety of levels, it seems to me, under the guise of opening us up.
Exactly. And Mark Zuckerberg is now something like the front page editor of the whole world.
Is that your line?
No,
that's a great
it's
line.
A, it's a line one of the former Facebook employees actually put. He was responsible for the advertisement, Antonio Garcia Martinez. And it's really interesting how many of the former actually high positioned employees of these companies are now criticizing the rule of these companies and the impact of these companies and how they handle it, how they deal with it.
Well, what's interesting to me about that, and that line just made me think of Ben Magdikian's book, Media Monopoly, that was written, I guess, in the early 80s, maybe late 70s, just coming out of the Nixon era, Watergate, and all that was going on there. What would have happened then had we had social media? Would there have been a clampdown? Or would word on the street have gotten out way sooner, about Vietnam, about the illegal bombings of Cambodia, and so on? And it's been, many films have been made about it. And then he goes and talks back then about this idea of this almost, what would you call it? I don't know, a close hold, mm-hmm. right? Like around information, around
exactly.
news, right? Because it's only going through a few sort of funnels or channels.
Exactly. And we have a situation not only in Myanmar, but that is maybe the best example, where people can't distinguish anymore between Facebook and the internet. They literally think Facebook is the internet. Because and that is by design, because the companies do everything they can to be, for a lot of people who have never been in touch with the internet or these technologies, like the first contact with these technologies. It means they provide internet to them, which is good. But on the other hand, they limit their internet access to Facebook itself. And that is dangerous, of course, because if the big majority of the people only informs itself by these few platforms, and these platforms keep a lot of content away from their platforms, sometimes for good reasons, sometimes for ambivalent, controversial reasons. Then imagine the power of these few companies, that they can literally split societies if they keep hatred up, if they allow hatred to spread without any border, which is the case in Myanmar. There's a genocide going on, and Facebook is doing, until now, they haven't done anything appropriate to really fight that that spreading of hatred. And and in other cases, they can silence whole groups. They can silence stigmatized groups just because they believe them to be terrorists, while they might be, in some other perspective, just criticizing an actual government.
What do you say to the boardroom consultant or the lawyer who says, you know what, we're doing the best we can?
You're talking about the hearings.
I'm talking about the rules, the documents, the guidelines. You know, we're doing what we can. We've got a lot going on. I mean, I've seen, the hearings, of course, the questions, the way they answer them, you know. We've got a lot on our plates here, Your Honor.
Yeah, this is really annoying because, I have to say, because they don't provide solutions. They don't have any solutions for the future.
Right.
This is what we think when we hear all the hearings. And one example is, for example, when we're talking about content moderation and the guidelines, the only thing Zuckerberg or the head of policy is telling to the audience that they try to hire more people to screen the content. But it's not just the numbers of people who screen the content, it's also the quality.
Right.
Because the content moderators, they are 18, 19 years old, young Filipinos screening all that stuff. And they have a very limited cultural background, which is really important to have when you do a job like this. You have a big responsibility. Just imagine an editor for a newspaper, for example. They are very, very well educated. They have they studied ethics and so on to decide what to publish and what not. And this is, for example, not a solution if Zuckerberg is telling us he will hire over 10,000 more people to do their job. It's no solution.
It's not right.
And it's also the time which they have to decide. I mean, if you want to make these platforms, first of all, profitable, it's obvious why they limit the time they have for each of these images to 3 to 5 seconds. But it's not appropriate time to decide whether an image is either newsworthy or too much gore or too cruel to be published. Like in some cases, an image is cruel. In some cases, it still might make sense to publish
to
this
publish
image.
It. No,
because
absolutely.
Like in one example from very short, shortly described, like from the Syrian war. And in a lot of cases, you get videos of people being killed in the war by airstrikes by the US, by the Russian, by different countries involved in the war. And the normal journalists, they can't report about the impact of these airstrikes and the results and the victims of these airstrikes, civilian victims, because they only can report in an embedded way. And what the citizen journalists in these countries do is they upload these videos they took by their mobiles on social media. And social media is, in the way, the only channel which remains in these countries. This was a Freudian mistake. In these companies, I wanted to say, there is still a difference. Countries.
For the time being.
Yes. It's in a lot of cases the only channel how to let a broader audience, a broader public know. And if the companies decide to take it down immediately because it might disturb the advertising clients,
right.
To see their advertisement being published next to a cruel war video.
If I see that, I might not buy those diapers that I probably don't need.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
What about, tell me about the content moderators a little bit more, these young men and women who are seeing some pretty, in some cases, pretty horrific, challenging things, making these decisions. You certainly raise questions around the Catholic-like edge to some of these folks who are making these decisions. There's a religious, there's a woman in the film who talks about evil, and it's kind of her job. She's on a bit of a mission to rid the world of evil, including the penis of, of Donald Trump on some, painting, this satirical painting.
Yeah.
Right? There's a perfect one, a perfect example of something that frankly needs to be seen by everyone.
Yeah.
And, and yet it was taken down, right? It's fascinating, by the way, and it's remarkable to me that you guys have made a film that's now that I've met you, I think I get it. But it's sadly kind of funny as well, mm-hmm. in its absurdity.
Yeah.
There's a comedic edge to what you're seeing unfold. Tragic, but all the comedic nevertheless.
Yeah, when we first went to Manila, we didn't expect that they are really, really proud of what they are doing there.
Right.
Because we expect like victims of the job, because it's hard to screen all these cool images every day.
Job.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
But then they are so proud of what they're doing because of different things or different points. One you mentioned is the religion. The Philippines is 90% of the Philippines are Christians there. And this is because of the colonization, like 300 years the Spains occupied the country, then 100 years the Americans. And and many of these workers have like a religious mission to clean up the social media. In every school you can read the quote, cleanliness is next to godliness.
Right.
So
right,
this is the background for them to do that job. And to liberate the world from its sins, it's like being Jesus, Jesus in front of a screen,
mission.
And sacrifice is a really, really strong term in the Philippines. Everyone is sacrifice himself for doing something which is better, to making the world better. Yeah, and that is like the narrative everyone is creating for themselves to deal with that kind of shit every day. I said shit once again.
And then you just said it again. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. You want to say it a third time? Yeah.
No.
We don't have any content moderators on this program on Face to Face.
Bad luck for you.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we're covered. Yeah. Not yet, anyway.
And then, that might explain a little bit better why in so many cases nudity is taken down, though at least for us in Europe, I guess here it's more or less the same, I would suggest, for a lot of people. Mm. It's acceptable to see some nudity if it's, for example, against breast cancer, or if it's...
Context.
If it's satire.
Context is important.
Yeah, exactly. It's all about context. And but if people are so religious and it's a sin for them to see nudity in whatever context it might be, it's no wonder that they take it down again and again. And the guidelines allow it to them if they are not read properly, or if they have to decide it's in a very quick way, which is the case. So it's no wonder.
I thought it was fascinating too how you, I forget the artist's name, and you referred to the image, and the artist eventually ends up cutting the child out of the photo.
Yeah, Khaled Barakesh.
And now all of a sudden it's no longer censored, right? Or at least that's the implication.
Yeah,
so you but yet it's almost more powerful in a way, right? What was there before? And it raises other questions.
It's interesting, right?
It really is. Yeah.
It uses the same mechanism, which is, on the other hand, so cruel for the workers that in some cases, in a moment when a part of an image or the image itself is not there, it can still be in the brain.
Well, it's like Hitchcock's approach to violence in a way,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
it's what's not seen.
Exactly. And that is so problematic for the workers that when the images are not on the screens anymore, if they in a lot of cases have already left the job a few months ago or years ago, the images might still remain in their brains. And that is the problem, that you can't know what it in which way it will affect you to see all these images. And so if we talk about the results of the work, it can in a lot of cases lead to suicide even.
Which you do bring out in the film as
And it's so hard to prove that this is caused by the job.
Right.
And the companies argue, like in a lot of cases in which it happened, they argue that it was for private reasons or whatever. But it's obvious that if somebody has to handle all kinds of self-harm videos, it's no wonder that one day he takes a rope and kills himself in front of a laptop even.
Right, right.
And still, the company declined to accept that this was for the reason caused by the job. And,
right.
And like Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, all these companies, they can easily decline to take responsibility because this person was hired by an outsourcing company.
Well, I was just going to say, this is third party, right? This isn't Facebook in the Philippines. This is a company hired by Facebook in the Philippines.
That's what makes it easy for them not feel responsible.
Right. Tell me, is it Tristan?
Iris.
Thank you. Tech has a bias. Tech has a bias. Is it the tech? Or is it the people behind the tech? Or is it kind of the same thing, would you say?
Good question.
I mean, it's the medium is the message, right? A little bit, Marshall McLuhan. It's you're getting to see the image. It's only so big, and so there's that bias. But there's also that 2 sec. I think you bring out in the film that they have about 8 seconds to decide on ignore or delete.
It depends on that's, their amount. That's exactly. But maybe to just start, it's always about humans and their way how they design technology. And this technology has a purpose. It's designed to attract attention. It's designed to get the most number of likes and shares and comments. And so it's all created to make people react. And so it's easy to understand why the more extreme content gets more attention than if somebody tries to be differentiate or tries to argue in a more complex way or tries to consider different points of view. This is content which doesn't work on social media like it is designed now. So it's no wonder that social media heads toward outrage, heads toward emotional reactions, quick reactions, because this is what's useful for the social media sites to get more content on their platforms, which can then be used for advertisement.
It keeps me online.
Exactly. Yeah, and to add just one thing is, this is the business model.
Right.
So the only goal for Facebook or Twitter is to gain money, as much as money as they can gain. And this is dangerous. This is really, really dangerous because this is, for example, why they outsource a very, very important work to the Philippines. I mean, it's an outsourcing of responsibility. Who decides what we see?
And that's not just because it's cheaper. That's because of legal implications as well, is it not? It's kind of, they can wash their hands of it a little bit.
Perfect.
Right?
If there's someone hanging in Manila, they can always tell everyone it's not our fault because it's an outsourcing company. We have nothing to do with that.
I love the phrase you just used, outsourcing responsibility.
It's an outsourcing.
I mean, that leads to insanity, if you ask me. If any of us outsourced our own responsibility as individuals, that's not going to fly in court, I don't think. Right? Yeah. I mean, it's about choice. Isn't that what freedom's really about, right? Having the freedom to choose, and I'm responsible ultimately, yeah. right? So it's rather absurd in a way.
And it's also the question if we should keep on outsourcing our responsibility right. as mm-hmm. users any longer, because I mean, it's easy for us to sit here and blame the companies,
right, of course,
but,
yeah.
but it would be maybe a more responsible approach to claim that we don't want to be users anymore.
Right, right.
We should really like question the fact if when the internet started, the project was about emancipation,
right?
About democracy. Democratization yes, yes. of the world. That was the utopia behind. And now we've come to a state in which we use tools which are designed by others, by major companies. The whole internet is divided into a few pieces which are owned by major companies. And we as users, we just accept what we get. But shouldn't we kind of start, if this is the public digital public of our world, shouldn't we start engaging more? Shouldn't we kind of try to be the moderators
right,
of
right,
our
right.
digital public well, and use liquid democracy tools, for example, in order to organize votings, in order to really connect with people from different parts of the world, in order to create our own guidelines for the community which we built, and maybe there need to be different guidelines for different parts of the world, and there might be under communities, sub communities in a way. But yeah, I think we are just at the starting point of understanding that we need to find democratic ways how to handle our digital public.
It's still so new, right? And that is a part of the problem, I suppose. And it was just kind of unleashed on the world. And we're still kind of reacting, I suppose, to it. But at the same time, becoming quite the digital addicts, really, are we, as a culture? We're going to have to wrap it up in a second. And I want to get to the kind of the way you end the film, ironically and tongue-in-cheek and all of that. But you mentioned that you still, you're still on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Are you guys hopeful? I mean, the film is dark. The film has a melancholic edge. It's comedic and all that. But I get the sense you're still hopeful that we can get to that tool or that liquid democracy, which is a lovely phrase. But
yeah, absolutely, because I don't like to miss the new infrastructure of communication or information which I'm using every day. I think this is a wonderful tool, but as you said before, Facebook is existing like 15 years ago. The project started
yes.
and now it grows so fast, maybe too fast, because
right.
so many problems, everybody closed the eyes of these problems. Now they are so big that we have to talk about the problems. And the film is much more about, okay, let's try it again.
Right.
Don't give up the fight, because yep. the tool is very, very good and we like to use it in the future, but in a different way.
Right.
Thinking about blockchain, thinking about peer-to-peer networks, thinking about so many better ways to construct and build these platforms as they are right now.
One connection, one innovation at a time. Right? Is that, I mean, tongue-in-cheek, ironic, I get it. Mark Zuckerberg at the end talking to a Facebook convention, I guess, is he? What is he, at a tech rally or something?
It is, and I really find it quite scary, because it reminds me on Believers. And in an interview with Antonio Garcia Martinez, who formerly worked for Facebook, he says, no, this is not just a businessman. He is a strong believer. And we believe that's the dangerous fact about
right.
this, not only this guy, but a lot of guys in Silicon Valley, that they, whenever they're confronted with problems of their companies, of their networks, They tell us about, yeah, we will fix it. Yeah, we are already working on it.
Right.
My team will follow up on that.
Yes.
That's
yeah.
just bullshit, because they don't get to the point of understanding that we really have to question the underlying business model of these platforms, of these new media companies. It's new. It's a
right.
new infrastructure.
Right.
So we really need to democratize these platforms, And we really, as a public, need to question if it should remain in the hands of companies.
And I think that's a pretty nice way to end this interview. I hate to end this interview. We need to keep going. There should be a part two to this, and I hope maybe there is. Hans Bloch and Moritz Riesewijk talking about their new film, The Cleaners, here at Hot Docs. Thanks, guys, for your time today. I really, and by the way, congratulations. Fascinating, brilliant film. I hope everyone sees it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.